Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us again for another fantastic webinar. I really appreciate you being here. We have some fantastic information about HIP. Now, if you're unfamiliar, this is a great, great program through the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. It can help you pay for your health insurance premiums. I mean, in this world, what is more important than health insurance? And having help to be able to pay for that is fantastic. So today we have Kate Lehman and Felicia McLaurin, and they're going to be talking to us about the HIP program. They're going to be telling us, you know, who is eligible, how this works, how you get signed up, and any questions you have about that. We will be able to address Felicia and Catherine, or Kate, to get the information. Before I turn it over to them, my name is Michelle Morris, and I am with Consolidated Planning Group. We love hosting these webinars for you and educating you on just general topics that deal with families that have a loved one with some kind of intellectual or developmental disability. We are first and foremost, Consolidated Planning Group is a financial advisor service. We're a firm located just outside of Houston in the Sugar Land area. We serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We have been doing this for about 30 years. And we decided probably about 6 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, to turn our practice towards focusing on helping individuals or families with an individual in their life who has a disability or a special need. The owner of our company has, she and her husband share 4 children, and 2 of them have disabilities. So this is really something that we live and eat and breathe at Consolidated Planning Group. We are members of the Special Needs Planning Academy. We're also national social security advisors. So we really truly can help you with all aspects of financial planning, benefits, life insurance, securities, estates, taxes, all of that stuff. And if we can't help you, we refer you to people who can. So when families come to us, some of the big questions that they have revolve around protection plans for their families. What happens if somebody loses a job or passes away, or the main breadwinner can't work anymore because they've become disabled? Lifetime care plans for that individual in your life who might need care even after you are gone. Maybe they can't work and be completely independent, or maybe they will need health care for the rest of their life. What does that look like, and how will you be able to afford that? Transition planning is, you know, when they are going from high school to the real world, there's a lot of changes. There's also a lot of legal changes when your child turns 18. Different benefits open up to them, and these things need to be addressed and planned for. We help with ABLE accounts. We help understand SSI and SSDI and waivers and special needs trusts, all kinds of things. Like I said before, we also do life insurance and investments, retirement planning, all of that. But mainly we want to be here as an education for you and to advocate for you. You know, in the United States, there are 263,000 financial advisors, 263,000. And out of those, fewer than 200 focus on special needs planning. That's not 200,000. That's 200 out of 263,000. That's less than a tenth of a percentage. It's crazy. This is definitely an area that people need help in. And we are definitely here, we are experts in this field. So the Couple last bits of advice I would like to give about special needs planning before I turn this over. And I do have some slides at the end because we offer a free consultation with Consolidated Planning Group if you're interested. And I'll tell you how to sign up for that at the end. But we know that it keeps you awake at night, worrying about your child and worrying who is going to take care of them when you're no longer here. And I want to let you know that the thing to do is to start planning right now. It doesn't matter how old your child is. It doesn't matter what you have or have not done in the past. Right now is the time to be thinking about the future. The more that you do now, the easier you will rest at night. The longer time you have, the more impact you can have on your finances overall. And really developing that future care plan will help you make sure everything is in place in case something untimely happens. We want you also to think about what's going to happen after high school. You don't necessarily want your child just to graduate onto the couch to play video games. So think about beyond high school, there are a lot of fantastic options. There are educational options, vocational options, residential options, just so much is available out there. And through our webinars, we've been able to bring a lot of that information out. So feel free to check our YouTube channel for some of the webinars that we've done with different programs. But you do want to check early to find a good fit for your family. And if there might be a possible waiting list for those programs, you want to make sure you get on that. And then our final bit of advice before we get to our main topic today is to make careful consideration before you just say, oh, a sibling is going to step in and take care of my loved one. That can cause a lot of friction in families. It can cause the child who is going to be the caregiver to feel that sense of obligation. And you don't know what their family dynamics are going to be like in the future, what their career, their way of life, you don't know. And so just relying on them is putting a lot of responsibility on them. On the other hand, your child who is going to be taken care of, you know, they've seen this person as a loving sibling all these years. Maybe they've fought, maybe they've had a loving relationship, whatever, but they've been siblings. And now the sibling wants to step up and try and be in control. That could cause some resentment too. So just be careful about assuming that it's going to be easier to have a sibling care for your loved one. Okay. So again, today we have Kate and Felicia at the Health Insurance Payment Premium Payment Program, Health Insurance Premium Payment Program. If you have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat box. We can't see you or hear you, but we will be keeping an eye on the chat box to answer your questions. And this webinar is being recorded, so later on today, you will receive the slides and a link to that recording. So if you miss anything, you'll be able to catch up with us then. All right, so if you are ready, Katie, feel free to take it away.
Great, thank you. That's great advice that you gave at the beginning too.
Oh, definitely thank you.
Something that we would agree with over at HHSC, the Health and Human Services Commission. My name is Kate Lehman. I am a director of program policy within the Medicaid and CHIP Services Division of HHSC. And so our area works on policy, rules, program development, technical assistance on various Medicaid programs, as well as some non-Medicaid programs such as CHIP and a few others. And today I'm going to talk with you about HIP, as Michelle said. We're going to go over several aspects of HIP. So just kind of an overview of what it is, eligibility requirements, the actual benefits of HIP, how to enroll in the program, the roles and responsibilities of the different entities that are involved, and then the reimbursement process. So first, what exactly is HIP? HIP is a Medicaid program that states can choose to implement. They don't have to. Texas does and has since 1994. The idea behind HIP is pretty simple. It is more cost effective for Medicaid to pay a premium for someone than it would be to pay for all of their medical services, which is what, if someone was eligible for Medicaid, we would be doing. And so the idea with HIP is that an individual can receive employer-sponsored health insurance. And if there is a premium or coinsurance, something like that, HIP can be used to help pay for that, and freeing that financial burden, lifting that financial burden off of the individual and their family. To qualify for HIP, an individual does need to be eligible for Medicaid or have a family member who is enrolled in Medicaid. I do want to, the second piece of that is also have an employer-sponsored insurance plan that would cover that Medicaid-enrolled family member. And I know that I just said eligible for, but really it is about that enrollment piece. The individual has to be enrolled in their employer-sponsored insurance, not just able to access it. And that comes into play when we are determining eligibility at enrollment and the verification process that goes with that. And we'll talk about that more in a moment. The individuals who are in our Star Health program or who are in CHIP are not eligible for HIP. Star Health is our Medicaid program for individuals who are in state conservatorship or foster care, part of the Department of Family and Protective Services system. And then CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program, is not Medicaid. And so that's a little more clear why that one wouldn't be part of HIP. Initially, HIP was envisioned as something for people who were in fee-for-service Medicaid as opposed to managed care Medicaid. And that was true in Texas. In 2015, that changed, and we were able to expand HIP to also apply to individuals that are receiving Medicaid through managed care, which is really critical when you think about the fact that over 90% of Texas Medicaid enrollees are receiving managed care Medicaid, not fee-for-service. So by making that transition from that fee-for-service limit to the managed care expansion, really opened up options for a lot more people than previously could have accessed HIP. Benefits for individuals that are in HIP include the reimbursement piece for the premiums, coinsurance, and deductibles. I know we say cost sharing on this slide. It is not available for co-payments, which is more what cost sharing refers to oftentimes. So that distinction between that premium piece and the co-payment that you actually pay as your doctor's insurance, the co-payment would not be covered. The premium, which is deducted from your paycheck often, would be. It does cover the premiums for family members in addition to the actual Medicaid eligible individual. So it can help the entire family. When we talk about HIP compared to other Medicaid programs where the benefits that are offered are the actual healthcare services, there aren't any actual healthcare services associated with HIP. HIP is really about removing, again, that financial burden and helping to clear obstacles to being able to receive the healthcare benefits, the actual services from the employer-sponsored insurance or ESI. A person who is in HIP has to be eligible and enrolled in Medicaid, as we said. And once a person is in Medicaid, they are eligible to receive any medically necessary Medicaid services. And so we call those, in this context, Medicaid wrap services. What we're really referring to, if there is a Medicaid service that is not covered by that employer-sponsored insurance, then Medicaid could be used to access that service. And so an example might be, especially for someone who potentially has a disability, possibly attendant services or certain nursing services, long-term nursing services. Those are the kinds of things that aren't always available through employer-sponsored insurance, but they are available, again, for individuals for whom it's a medically necessary service. They are available through Medicaid. And so one bonus of being in HIP is that you would have access to those additional Medicaid services, because that is a federal requirement for the type of Medicaid eligibility that you would have. Those services, and really any of the services, must be provided by Medicaid enrolled providers. That does include providers, even if they are providing the employer sponsored insurance service. That provider does need to be enrolled as a Medicaid provider. One of the other federal rules for Medicaid is that only Medicaid enrolled providers can receive Medicaid funding. And so even that premium piece, anything that's being used to go to that provider would need to be something that could be reimbursed through Medicaid. Individuals do keep their Medicaid benefits. As I just said, you would be eligible to receive both. As with any other Medicaid and other non-Medicaid interaction, insurance interaction, that non-Medicaid insurance must be exhausted before Medicaid could be used. So if there is a service that is covered by both the employer-sponsored insurance and the Medicaid program, the individual would need to get that service through their employer-sponsored insurance plan as opposed to Medicaid until such point as they cannot get it anymore through their employer-sponsored insurance, whether because there's a service limit, only 20 physical therapy appointments in a year or something like that, to where that ESI is now limiting that service and there is still a necessity for it, then you could look to those Medicaid benefits. But as long as you can get it through ESI, that would be where you would need to access that benefit, not Medicaid.
So we do have a quick question in the chat, and I think you kind of talked about it, but I just want to be very clear. Okay. People who are on like Obamacare or healthcare.gov, those kinds of plans, can they get this or does it have to be through an employer?
It has to be through an employer.
Okay. Just want to make that very clear.
Yes. Good question. So enrollment is a pretty straightforward process along with the theme of HIP in general. There is a specific form that needs to be completed, the HIP application, and you can access that on the HHSC webpage, which we've got here on the slide. There is a HIP helpline that a person could call if they needed assistance completing that application. And that is the phone number that you've got here on the screen, the 800-440-0493. If you call there, someone would be able to help you kind of work through whatever your challenges were with the form and any questions that you have about the form. There is supporting documentation that needs to be submitted as well to determine eligibility. And this is where I was speaking at the beginning, that difference between eligibility and enrollment. One piece that does need to be submitted is the ESI rate sheet. The rate sheet is something that your employer should have, and that is essentially what the employer-sponsored insurance plan pays for services and what they are charging as a premium. So it's the financial information for that side of your health insurance. The other piece that you need to submit is proof of payment, and that has been made already. And so by that, we are talking about various types of documentation. It could be a pay stub from your employer. If that pay stub has enough detail that you can see the amount that was taken out for health insurance, if you have bank information that shows that you made a payment for employer-sponsored insurance, if you can, another option would be employer provided documentation, so a letter from your employer on their official letterhead or from the insurance company, the employer sponsored insurance company, saying and attesting that you have this insurance and that you are enrolled in it and that you are contributing to that. There are a few other things. We do have these listed on our website at that place, hhs.texas.gov. So if you're unsure of what might qualify, that would be the place to go. And you can see the full list of what does, and then also some common things that do not qualify as necessary documentation. Once you've been determined eligible and you have enrolled in HIP, there will be a monthly requirement that you submit that same evidence, a pay stub, bank information, provider, employer documentation to continue to show your ESI enrollment and that you are continuing to receive that. So that would be something that would be due on a monthly basis throughout the year. In addition to that, there is an annual re-enrollment process that you would have to go through, which does look a lot like that initial enrollment. You do have to provide the same kind of information. It is based on that ESI benefit period. And again, the same kinds of questions are asked, the same documentation is collected around proof of having employer-sponsored insurance. There may be some additional documentation that HHSC asks for, and that would be something that as you're going through the process, the person you're working with at HHSC would request.
Is there a maximum that HIP would reimburse?
That is a great question, and I do not believe so, but I can confirm that and send something, I think, maybe to you, Michelle. Okay, yeah, is there like a post communication or something that might be going out?
Yes, yes. Okay. And Natalie, if you want to send me your info, or I'll put my email in the chat box so you can email that question to me to make sure that we get you taken care of. The other question in the chat box that I think is another really great question. Otherwise, I wouldn't interrupt you for these.
No, you're fine.
But if the ESI premiums are paid for from pre-tax money, then does that mean that you have to pay taxes on the HIP benefit?
Oh, and that is something that I am not able to answer. It is a very good question. And I will also take that one back because I don't even want to guess at that one.
Yeah. At Consolidated Planning Group, we do have a CPA that we refer our clients to who is very knowledgeable in the nuances of special needs related tax issues. Mm-hmm. So if you want to reach out to me again, I put my email in the chat box so you can reach out to me directly and I can hook you up with our CPA contact who can help with that question.
Okay.
And then can HIP reimburse for previous payments?
Also a good question, and I do not believe so, but again, I will confirm that. It's going to begin with, and your first month has to align with that evidence of enrollment in your ESI. So that's just part of the eligibility piece. But I can confirm that.
Great, thank you so much.
All right. So for roles and responsibilities, I just wanted to go over so it's the things that we've already talked about, but just another underscoring of who is doing what in all of the different activities that are related to determining eligibility, enrolling, and then continuing to be enrolled in HIP. So as the person who's benefiting from HIP, or the family member of the person who would qualify for Medicaid, it is your responsibility to do the application, to provide that supporting documentation, to make sure that you are maintaining your employer-sponsored insurance health coverage. If there's anything that you have to do on that end, that would be between you and your employer, and you would need to be able to keep that up. You would be documenting the payment of the premium and providing that to HHSC so that we can provide that monthly reimbursement. And again, as I said, that could be the pay stub. Oftentimes, that shows if that shows the amount that was taken out of your paycheck. It could be bank information that shows what you paid. So depending on what that looks like, that would be the monthly information that you would submit in order to be reimbursed. You would need to update HHSC if there are any changes to that employer-sponsored insurance. So HHSC is not monitoring that employer-sponsored insurance. If there is a change, you would need to let HHSC know so that we can determine if there's any impact to HIP and if there's anything that needs to be done for the Medicaid side of things in order to make sure everything continues to move seamlessly. And then, should there come a time where there's an overpayment, we would need to take that money back, the amount of the overpayment. And so it would be the responsibility of the individual to work with HHSC on that to get that money back to HHSC. I don't know that that really happens a lot in this day and age of everything being automated, but it is something to be aware of because certainly things like that can happen from time to time. HHSC's role and responsibilities are going to be focused mostly on the Medicaid side of things, which is with HIP being Medicaid, includes that enrollment and eligibility into HIP. So HHSC will collect the application, evaluate the information that's provided, and determine that eligibility, and then enroll the individual. If we need more information from either the you or your employer, we would request that. If there's something that we have come across and we have questions, we do issue the reimbursements, which makes sense. And then we do identify those potential overpayments, and we would reach out to the individual to resolve. Again, because the overpayment would be on the Medicaid side of things, that would be part of what HHSC is responsible for. On the
There was another question in chat, and Felicia's her answer didn't go through to everybody. It only went to hosts and panelists. So I just wanted to reiterate that the premium is paid for the whole family, not just one person, not just the person who's on Medicaid, as long as someone in the family is on Medicaid, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Next slide.
Yes. So your employer responsibilities are very similar to the HHSC side of things, but for that employer-sponsored insurance, they have to provide those benefits. They have to give you the information on that coverage that you need. if you need additional information, that in order to work with the hip benefits, they have to provide that to you timely. If HHSC requests it, they need to provide it to us in a timely manner. If you are working and you become eligible for Medicaid, some of you may be familiar with the idea of a qualifying event with employer-sponsored insurance. That's when, instead of the typical annual enrollment opportunities that a person would have with their employer insurance, a qualifying event is something that has changed in your life that now means your insurance needs have changed essentially. So a qualifying event might be having a child, and so you need to add that child to your insurance. It might be someone, well, I'll stick with that example because that's the one that I'm confident in, and I won't speak to other insurance examples, but that's what we mean by qualifying event. Becoming eligible for Medicaid and being able to use HIP counts as a qualifying event. So your employer insurance opportunity to enroll, instead of having to wait until the next annual open enrollment period to set that up, the employer has to allow you to do that once your HIP enrollment is in progress. And then finally, they do have to provide information at the end of the year about any benefit changes or any plan changes that they are making. They have to provide that information to HHSC because, again, that may impact the HIP side of things. So if your employer changes their insurance company, they used to use United, now they use Blue Cross, or they change what they cover. They add a benefit or remove a benefit, anything of that nature, cost changes. Those are things that the employer would need to communicate to HHSC, as soon as they're able to. The reimbursement process is what HIP is, reimbursement as opposed to an upfront payment or a payment to another entity, like directly paying the provider. What happens is the individual would receive that reimbursement from HHSC. So the reimbursement eligibility is after we've determined that you're eligible and you have enrollment. You have sent us as part of that because you have been enrolled. So we know we've received that initial proof of payment. That is something that, again, you will be providing monthly. And we then, HHSC, will then reimburse you for the amount that you paid in the premium. And you can send us that proof of payment up to 3 months after the fact, and we will reimburse you for that. If you get beyond 3 months from when you made the payment, the HIP would no longer be able to reimburse you. So I'll say that
Okay.
again because that's really key.
Yeah,
And
and that goes back to that question that was asked.
it does a bit. So this is not what I, and maybe I misunderstood the earlier question, which was if there could be a retroactive eligibility for HIP, if HIP could pay for, perhaps you weren't aware of HIP, so you enroll in it now. Could they go back and pay your premiums back to January, for example? That may not, though, be what the question was. If it was about this, then yes, that is a different answer. If you have paid the premium and it just takes you, for whatever reason, 3 months to get that information to HHSC, we can reimburse for up to 3 months after that.
Fantastic.
And that is the last slide that I have. I'm happy to answer any questions. As we say here on the screen, because we do want to make sure that we're giving accurate qu answers to these questions. We do, I need to make sure that the true subject matter experts are helping to review those responses. So,
okay, yeah, we do have a question about someone is saying that they had low cost health insurance through UT Health, which is a government employer, but then they moved to a private company that had more costly health insurance, and then all of a sudden it wasn't covered anymore. So what would cause somebody to lose eligibility? Does it have to do with the cost, or does it have to do with where they were working, public versus private?
It shouldn't be either of those. I do wonder if something about the change in jobs might have had an impact. And if you wanted to send the specifics of your scenario to me, my email address is there on the screen. Please do, and I can look at the specifics of the case and see if I have a better answer than that. But really, the HIP piece should apply. It shouldn't have changed for those two reasons, moving from right. public to private, or because it's a more costly plan. So,
okay. So that's something that we can get this person help in looking at. Now, what if somebody applies for the HIP program and they are not approved? Is there an appeals process, or how does that work?
That is a good question. And I am also, again, not certain. I can take that back and also confirm what that process would look like.
Okay. And it's really, I mean, there's not a whole lot of criteria. So you have to have a family member who is on Medicaid, and you have to have an employee-sponsored insurance plan. And those are the only two criteria, right?
Yes. And the I think the reason we don't hear a lot more about HIP is because the combination of those two things is difficult to do. So it's hard to be in Texas to be employed and then also meet the Medicaid eligibility, the financial floor limits for Medicaid. There's a narrow margin there, I think. So, but yes, if I do, I can get an answer to that.
Right. But thinking about the population of families that we serve, you know, once that child turns 18, then they can qualify for SSI benefits, which come along with Medicaid. So if the child in this family is 18 and they qualify for Medicaid, would that count? And then the rest of the family gets HIP?
I think it depends on the relationship between the parent and the adult child. This is going to be a theme. I can take that back and get confirmation on exactly what that relationship
what that would need to look like. Yes, because we're, like I said, we serve, of course, you know, we serve mainly families with kids who have some sort of disability. So when they file for their SSI benefits, they're showing proof that they are disabled and unable to work to earn a substantial gainful amount. And probably going to be living with their adult parents for years and years to come. But do you know of any other reasons why someone might be denied?
I don't want to answer that because there may be so much can be nuanced with these things, but I'll put it this way. The requirements are around having employer-sponsored insurance and being eligible for Medicaid and having those two things.
Okay.
If there is something unique to the type of Medicaid you have, that may impact it. There are many different types of Medicaid that a person could be eligible for. And depending on which one you have, that may impact whether or not you're eligible for HIP. There may be something about your employer-sponsored insurance that makes it not qualify. So I don't want to say that there's, within those two things, there may be things that could disqualify you.
Okay. Well, if you have more questions for Catherine, please put them in the chat box and we'll get to those. I have a couple more slides to go over before we wrap up for the day. And this is a great chance for anybody to put any last minute questions in the chat. So these are a list of some of the things to keep on your radar as it relates to special needs planning. So think about that care plan for the future. We can help you estimate how much money your loved one will need to be taken care of for the rest of their life. What does that future cost of care look like? We can help you understand the waiver programs and how to get on the interest lists. SSI and SSDI, there are differences in those two programs. Just because they sound so similar doesn't mean they are. And we can help you get started with those and understand how they work. ABLE accounts. We talk a lot about beneficiary designations and making sure that you don't jeopardize your child's SSI or Medicaid benefits because of too much money in the wrong bucket. Special needs trusts. Now, you need an attorney to help you set up the special needs trust, but we can help you make sure it gets funded. And if child support is a thing in your life, and that child support is going to continue beyond your child's age 18, which is possible here in Texas, then that child support will need to go to a first party special needs trust. We've had webinars with attorneys to discuss that, so feel free to check those out. Residential living communities. We talk a lot about guardianship and alternatives to guardianship. Again, this is something that requires an attorney. And that process can be started when you're within about 6 months of your child's 18th birthday. And then again, thinking about educational options beyond high school. There are a lot of great programs out there. So these are things that you kind of want to keep an eye and ear out for. If you would like to catch some more of our webinars, you can click this link when you get the slides later on. It will take you to our website events tab. And that's where we have all of our upcoming webinars listed. You can register for the webinars. And even if you are unable to attend live, we're happy to send out a link to the recording and the slides that go along with that webinar. All of our webinars get put on our YouTube channel. So that's a great library of resources for all of you to check out. This is our team. The four people on top, again, are the financial advisors, two husband and wife sets. So Allison and Jeff are the owners of the company, and then me and my husband, Andy, our advisors as well. We've got a fantastic staff that helps out with everything. And we will be reaching out to you. When you registered for this event, you gave us your phone number and email, and we're going to reach out and just try to find out if you would like to set up your free consultation. So please be kind and gentle. We are really just trying to help, not trying to sell you something immediately. I mean, eventually we would like you to use our services if they fit your family. But we're just trying to get you to sign up for a free consultation. These are over Zoom. They usually take between 30 to 45 minutes. And our first goal on this consultation is to answer your questions. Of course, we want to know a little bit about your family. We ask for a questionnaire to be filled out beforehand, just so we have some basic information and we're not walking in blind to this consultation. But once when we're meeting with you, we truly just give you the chance to pick our brains. What questions do you have? How can we help you? And then we'll go into more of how we work and what we do and what we charge and if it would be a good fit for your family. I promise we don't bite. So go ahead and schedule your free consultation, or we'll reach out to you to get that scheduled for you. Okay. Able accounts. This is a question in the chat box. Able accounts, how do you open one? And does your organization assist with the SSI interviews? So Monica, we do ABLE accounts. There are over 50 different ABLE accounts all across the United States, and you are free to pick whichever one you want. They have different program details, and you can look into those online. The one that we use for our clients is through the state of Virginia. American Funds runs that ABLE, and if you would like us to be in charge of that for you, we can do all the paperwork and explain it all to you and walk through it with you and set that up for you. We do not assist directly with SSI interviews, but we will tell you who, when to call, who to call, what magic words you need to use, what forms and documentation you need to have in place, and give you kind of a step-by-step instructions to go get it done. Another question in the chat box, could you provide resources on waivers, SSI and SSDI and residential communities? We do provide those resources through a couple of different options. Our webinars have a lot of that information and those resources. If you become our client, of course, we give those resources to you and talk you through exactly what you need to do pertaining to your own situation. Other than that, you know, these are things that we provide to our clients. So join us, become our client, and we would be happy to walk you through everything you need to know about the waivers, SSI, SSDI, residential communities, all of that stuff. Or go right here. This red arrow is our YouTube channel link, and all of the webinars are there. It'll take you a lot longer to get that info, but it's still out there for free. The other links down here would be for our Instagram, our podcast, and our Facebook page. So we do have a podcast in case you would prefer to listen to us rather than watch the webinars all the time. Okay. I don't see any more questions in the chat box, so I will just wrap it up. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you especially to Kate and Felicia for getting all of this information to us. It is just really in our hearts to be able to be here and help you. I do see one more question. I'm looking at the form right now, and they ask for a case number. What is that? Is that for...
Which form are you...
Yeah. Colleen, are you talking about the HIP form or... And then the other question, what is your YouTube channel link? It's right here. If you just click this red arrow when you get these slides later on. Trying to get the link to come up. Anyway, she's talking about form 5020. She says...
You wouldn't have a case number until you were, of course, enrolled in something. So it, there is a spot for both numbers. Okay. I was about to say, I'm looking at the form myself right now. I don't see that question. What step is it under? Oh, there it is. Medicaid case number. That would be, I think that's going to be the Medicaid number. I know that it asks the Medicaid ID above, but um, And it says that it can be found on the ID card. I'm not sure where. I definitely encourage you to call that number that we showed on the screen. And I can say it again.
I can go back.
One moment. Goodness.
Here it is. This one, 800-440-0493 for assistance.
Yes, and they should be able to confirm exactly what that number is supposed to be.
Form 5020. Perfect. And I did, our YouTube channel is just at youtube.com/consolidatedplanninggroup. If you go to YouTube and just type in Consolidated Planning Group, you should see our little circular, this little gray and purple logo would be there. So you know that it's us. All right. Again, I thank everybody for being here with us today. If you have follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to me or to Kate. Kate, you've been fantastic today. And everyone, I hope you have a great week and that you're having a great summer. And that if you have any questions, you understand that we are here to help. You've got resources here in myself and in Kate, in HIP, in Consolidated Planning Group. We are here to help. So feel free to reach out to us and have a great day. Bye, everybody. Thank you.